Chapter 29. Richard Colmer had unfortunately fallen on hard times since having fallen out of favor as a Broadway producer. By 1965, the couple was married in name only, while Colmer had several affairs, as noted in Kilgallen's FBI file. From about 1960 on, Colmer, who had become an alcoholic, was basically a kept husband, depressed, having tumbled from being a successful businessman to a lonely man fallen from grace. The New York Post Daily Magazine dubbed Richard a muddling amateur as a producer. His once proud reputation was in tatters, while festering beneath the surface was a strong jealousy of Kilgallen's fame and downright hatred of his wife based on a secret kept from friends and the public at large. In 1960, a New York Post Daily Magazine column mentioned Kilgallen's marriage to Richard Colmer, concluding, "They go their separate ways for the most part." 5 years later, the relationship, if anything, had worsened. Richard was not the man he had been when Kilgallen married him, but a drunk with very little means of making an income. The embarrassment Richard experienced must have been devastating. After all, he was a failure in his wife's eyes, a man with little hope who kept up the pretenses of a happy marriage, one pockmarked with affairs and drunkenness. Certainly his appearance had changed. He now had a bloated look to him, his face blotched at times, his eyes bloodshot, his gait unsteady, a far cry from the handsome, debonair actor and producer Kilgallen had married. If Richard was embarrassed, one may only imagine how Kilgallen felt when he made a fool of himself at social gatherings and the like, especially in the company of her friends and journalistic colleagues. Kilgallen's sensitive side wasn't often displayed to the public, but she must have felt sorry for Richard, although shouting matches from time to time had to have been part of the equation. Primary source evidence of Richard's philandering came from Charlotte Manson, a successful radio actress who knew both Kilgallen and her husband. She told a friend Richard's whoring was well known. Apparently, Richard also boasted to Manson of his female conquests at parties she hosted. Kilgallen's husband had actually impregnated several women. His attorney, Edgar Hatfield, confirmed that working out financial settlements with many of them apparently resulted in abortions. No mention was made of whether any of Richard's conquests had a child or if Kilgallen knew of the pregnancies. Pianist Lee Evans, who performed at Dick Colmer's Left Bank restaurant, was embarrassed by Richard's flings. Evans said Richard rented a third-floor apartment above that restaurant where he met the women for many one-night stands. "Dick works every night except Sunday, and I'm out at least 4 nights a week to cover Broadway openings and usual rounds of a columnist," Kilgallen told friends. She added, "When I'm home, and Dick isn't, I occasionally have friends in. He came home at 4 a.m. and was very amused to see me let 7 men out the front door. We had been playing cards. Just a couple of years ago, I learned to play poker and blackjack." Somewhat of a lost soul, Richard spent time at a neighborhood bar and prowled New York City seeking female companionship and, very likely, their understanding of his plight. The nightclubs he had owned, the Left Bank in Manhattan and Paris in the Sky in East Orange, New Jersey, finally closed. When Richard wasn't hitting on women, he spent most of his time collecting classic Victrola records, toy banks, and sculpted hands. He mostly quit accompanying Kilgallen on the New York City social scene. As was the case with Marilyn's love life, which swirled with false facts and rumors designed to tarnish her image, completely untrue but perpetuated through the years, Kilgallen elicited similar accusations, including that she slept with several powerful men. Nothing could have been further from the truth. Kilgallen, whom Mark Sinclair said became lonely after her relationship with Colmer soured, had, as noted, also taken on a lover, famed singer Johnny Ray, known for the hits Cry and The Little White Cloud That Cried. The FBI memo on Kilgallen indicated the agency was monitoring her daily life. Worse, the explosive love affair with Ray, an admitted homosexual who was obviously bisexual, had infuriated Colmer, who suspected that he may not have been the birth father of youngest son Kerry. In fact, Kilgallen's family members have confirmed that Kerry was indeed Ray's illegitimate son, as did Mark Sinclair. Asked if Kilgallen ever told him that the dark-haired Richard was not Kerry's father, Sinclair said in a videotaped interview, "Yes, she did. She said that Johnny Ray was the father of her youngest child." Regarding any resemblance between Ray and Kerry, Sinclair stated, "Yes, I saw a strong resemblance, coloring, freckles, things like that." This similarity in appearance coincides with Kilgallen describing Kerry in her TV radio mirror interview as a husky 6-year-old with freckles across his nose who loves Dennis the Menace. Also, in a September 1954 Good Housekeeping magazine article, Kilgallen wrote about Kerry's birth. In 2017, when Brenda Desjardins, the daughter of Kilgallen's butler James Clement, was interviewed by this author and informed there was evidence Kerry was Johnny Ray's son, Desjardins said, "So that's where the red hair came from." If one compares childhood photos of Kerry with childhood photos of Johnny Ray, there appear to be significant similarities between their respective noses. While Dorothy and Richard's noses have some sharp curvature, neither Kerry's nor Ray's has that feature, but instead a more rounded shape. Providing more information about the possibility of Kerry being Johnny Ray's son, Sinclair said in the late 1990s, "And I think that Ray being Kerry's father is what she was referring to when she said she couldn't divorce Richard because Richard had done too much for her." Queried whether Richard had to pretend to be Kerry's father, Sinclair replied, "No, she never said that, and this was at the very end of her life that she told me this." While admitting later, Kilgallen told him Richard had performed a fatherly acting job. As to whether Kilgallen would have ever wanted the truth to be told, Sinclair said, "Oh, no, I would never have repeated it, and I'm very wrong in repeating it now. I'm not really sure why she told me that." Obviously, Kerry was a love child, a cherished blessing for Kilgallen at the advanced age of 41 when pregnancy can be dangerous. Ever keeping her private matters private, she never acknowledged to the media that Kerry was Johnny Ray's son, and apparently her adoring public was no wiser. Regardless, the Good Housekeeping article, like the accounts from Marilyn's book My Story, which permitted a better understanding of who she really was, provides insight into the human side of this remarkable Renaissance woman who broke the glass ceiling time and time again. Titled, "Practically Anybody Can Do It," with the subheading, "Or So This Famous Columnist Says, Who Recently Had Another Baby," the first line reads, "My baby has red gold hair," a stark contrast to the dark-haired Richard and her own hair color. She then continues by writing, "And coloring so extravagantly pink and orange that I think God, when he designed him, must have been strongly under the influence of Renoir," a tribute, for sure, to her undeniable skills as a superb wordsmith. Kilgallen, the loving and proud mother, the caring woman she was away from the bright lights of celebrity, then added, "He likes to pose his little starfish hands, wrists crossed, under his chin, as if he is pretending to be a cherub on the ceiling of a Baroque cathedral. When he hears my voice, he sometimes smiles, sometimes even in his sleep. I would rather take care of him than go to a party." Indicating the unconditional love that she had for her youngest son, Kilgallen wrote, "His name is Kerry. His eyelashes lie on his cheeks like fringe made from a cobweb. The soles of his feet are as smooth as porcelain, and he smells of milk and sugar and baby oil and flowers. He is more lovely than a rose or dawn in Venice, or the victory at Samothrace. Hellenistic marble sculpture of Nike, the Greek goddess of victory that was created in about the 2nd century BC. Kilgallen added, "At the age of 6 weeks, he changed moods with the facility of a brilliant Shakespearean actor. Hungry, he is a tragedian. No Lear ever yowled at fate more hastily. Fed, he is Falstaff, happily drunk. Held against my shoulder, he is Romeo, turning his bright, sweet head to kiss my cheek. Lying in his crib, he ponders, as Hamlet did, the imponderables." Such a loving way toward Kerry was certainly in contrast with feelings toward her other two children. Kilgallen was never close with her oldest son, Richard, Dicky, who had to be sent away to boarding school because of his disruptions to the family, and daughter Jill, whom she constantly argued with, including a shouting match a month or so before Kilgallen died that Mark Sinclair witnessed, so heated to the point that mother and daughter never spoke again between that time and when Kilgallen died. To be certain, the children living in a household with a famous mother and an alcoholic father contributed to an emotional state that must have been difficult for the entire family. Kilgallen must have swept away the tears on several occasions when dealing with both Dicky and Jill, disappointed as a loving mother that both of them had contempt for her at times. As Kilgallen hit the threshold of 40, she provided insight into the woman she was at the time. As the headline for the article, "Anybody Can Do It," promised, she was attempting to inspire women of her age, busy women like her, not to shy away from giving birth. She wrote, "I am not Josephine Q. Supergirl. I quail at the sight of a dentist's drill. The Amazons would have thrown me out of their club, and I would have made a spectacularly unimpressive pioneer woman. I cite my case history only because if I can do it, give birth at an advanced age, anybody can do it." Kilgallen added, "My sex has progressed a long way from the thinking of my mother's generation, but I feel there are still too many who look upon pregnancy as an affliction. When they find out they are pregnant," she wrote, "these women start preparing for what is essentially a normal and highly usual event as if it was the conquest of Mount Everest." Ever conscious of her wardrobe, the expectant mother admitted she expanded from a size 10 to a 12, and finally a 14. She wrote, "I felt like in them I looked like me, and neither my family or my friends shunned me for being a little chubbier around the middle." Summing up, Kilgallen was a true cheerleader for motherhood, writing, "It is sad to think that any woman should regard pregnancy as a dreary interlude rather than a heightening of the adventure of life, because an expectant mother ought to be a happy egotist. She is doing something only she can, bringing this unique, this possibly marvelous baby into the world. And while others can help in minor ways, the burden of the miracle is on her. She is a dramatic figure, honored, privileged, blessed." Who knows whether Marilyn might have read the article, realizing that at age 28, there was still time to birth the child she so desperately wanted to bear. Even when she was 36, at the time of her death, Marilyn could still have become a mother.